You're listening to The Comedy Cellar, live from the table on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com.
So hello, everybody. This is Live from the Table, the Comedy Cellar, and we're going to do a special show today about something which has been on my mind a lot, which is masks and what they can do to help us get out of this COVID predicament. Of course, we're here, as always, with Mr. Dan Natterman. Hello, Daniel.
How do you do?
Is that a green screen, or are you actually cracking?
I'm not, and I assume this is somewhere in the Pacific Northwest. It certainly looks like that, but I'm on the Upper East Side.
Oh, it looked tropical to me. All right.
No, and, it's kind of
tropical. Oh, I see. Yeah. Is that Mount St. Helens or something? Anyway, and Perry L. Ashenbrand, the author of, I can't even say the title of her book. Anyway, I saw an article at the, what's the name of the website? This Tony Blair organizational website about the importance of masks for exiting lockdowns. And I immediately wanted to get a hold of the people who were involved in this. So we have Ryan Wayne, who's an advisor to Tony Blair, who, for Perry L's sake, was a former prime minister of worked extensively on COVID-19 response, including looking at the role masks can play, setting out a strategy for mass testing. Prior to politics, he held a senior position within the ad industry, like advertisement industry?
Yeah, ad world, like Mad Men, but a really crap version.
Dekai, I don't know if this is a stage direction, I was supposed to say this, is a two-word mononym. Always.
Hey, you don't have to say that.
His title is a professor of computer science and engineering, University of Science and Technology, Hong Kong, distinguished research scholar, International Computer Science Institute, Berkeley. He's involved in AI and machine learning, and named a founding fellow in the Association for Computational Linguistics for breakthroughs that led to Google, Yahoo, Microsoft, Translate, board member of the Future Society, named inaugural member in 2019 by Google to its AI Ethics Council. Holy, that's an incredible resume. You guys, the bubble over his head is like, how did I get myself into this? okay. So look, I've been saying for a long time on this show that given what we know about growth, just using compound interest as an analogy, that anything that could have helped slightly 100 days ago would have had drastic consequences by now. And that led me to start looking into masks. And what I found was a lot of literature which suggested that masks alone could bring the R-naught below zero and could actually get us out of this situation, and could have avoided it, but could get us out of it. So let's start on my screen, your left to right. So Dekai, tell us about that, and then Ryan can add in. Go ahead.
So, you know, I'm actually both in Hong Kong and at Berkeley regularly outside of these weird coronavirus times. I'm going back and forth. And so one of the things that hit me very early on was this dissonance between the way that Hong Kong was treating it and the way that the U.S. was treating it. In Hong Kong, already in January, people started masking up. People started paying attention to the WHO warnings already in late December. And our university was to start the spring semester February 1st. Throughout January, it was already discussing heavily, planning, what if we don't open physically? What if we have to go online, delay the start of the semester? We did all of that. We've never opened up. None of the schools in Hong Kong have opened up until literally today. They're going to start a half-time approach to getting the kids back into the schools. We have had to date 4 deaths in Hong Kong the entire time. We have had only a couple hundred local transmission cases. The vast majority of cases that we have had have been people coming in from Europe, from the US, from other parts. And this is in Hong Kong, where we have far more people coming in from mainland China and even Wuhan in the early days. And so it really started worrying me. By February, in the discussion groups about the coronavirus, that, you know, all of us are in 15 different groups about that, I found myself having to say over and over, why is the conversation in the Western media not even talking about masking? You know, there was this conversation about physical distancing, social distancing, which regions were doing contact tracing, which regions were doing testing. And it wasn't even on the radar. It wasn't even brought up. Right. You go to the WHO data, the Johns Hopkins data, and so forth. They have columns for everything except for masking. And so after the fifth time I had to push this into the group, I was like, where is this unconscious bias coming from that we're not even talking about this? Because, you know, it's not just Hong Kong. It is 100% of the countries that have been successful in suppressing the virus exponential spread or driving it down from early exponential spread, for example, South Korea. 100% correlation of the countries that and regions that have actually implemented universal masking, either as a culture or as a policy, and success. And
100%.
So our study has shown that. And if you look at the converse, it's about 100% of the countries that have not had that kind of policy, where after the initial outbreak, they've gone exponential with the spread. So now, correlation is not causation, but we don't have any more than that for social distancing either. We don't have exact numbers on the efficacy of testing and tracing either. Nobody is saying, oh, we shouldn't do any of these things until we have 100% scientific proof, which of course, you know, isn't going to happen for another 6 months. Right. And according to our modeling, we've introduced two new models in our work. We are rapidly running out of time. If you don't start masking up by about day 50 and have the majority of your population masked up, 80, 90%, then it becomes too late. If only half your population masks up, it has basically no significant effect at all because of the exponential spread that you were talking about, Noam. If you wait until about day 75, it's also too late because you've let it spread too far. And, so this is not countrywide. The U.S. has gotten hit in different places at different stages. New York obviously, unfortunately, got hit early and hard. It's way past day 50 for New York. But for many parts of the country that are maybe more spread out, there is still time for people to get masked up. And this is super urgent.
So, Ryan, do you want to add something to that, or should I can I follow up question on that?
Ask a follow up question. Yeah.
So isn't it? We're way past day 50, but isn't it also always still day one, in the sense of prospectively, the cases that are out there already will resolve one way or another, and among all the people who haven't gotten it yet, we're still at day one. For the next, 50 days. So what would be the effect of all masking up now?
Absolutely, because New York has...
I was going to ask that for Ryan. I'm sorry. Oh. Go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, sorry, could you say that again? I had to finish up with Dekai.
Well, what I was saying is that Dekai was talking about we're way past day 50 here, but I'm saying in another sense, we're always at day one. Because there's the next... future of the people who have not yet caught the virus. So what is your take on what the effect of masking up today would be?
Yeah, so it's important actually to keep reminding ourselves that whilst every day we don't do something, we are running out of time. That shouldn't stop us introducing measures even now. And I think what we did with our paper was really try and make a plea to the UK government to reconsider masks culturally. So some of the points that Dekai makes where it just wasn't even on the government's radar at all to use masks. But then also trying to shift the lens, if you like, through which masks are viewed in terms of the roles they can play. This is where I think it answers your question in terms of what can happen now. When we talk about masks, we don't mean masks to protect the wearer. This is a really important point. we want to see mask wearing to protect people outside of the wearer. And so what we mean by that is the masks form a transmission, a barrier to the droplets of infected people. And therefore they prevent other people getting infected as opposed to the individual themselves. So to the Kai's point, it makes absolute sense then to roll out masks to as many people as possible. You basically want mass population coverage of these so that no one is transmitting the virus to anyone else. So relating to your question, if we introduce it now, sure, there's a significant number of infected people. Now, lockdowns played a part in reducing that. But those who are infected, they're forced or mandated to wear a mask. It's going to reduce the number of people who they can then infect. And going right back to what you said at the beginning, that is going to have a positive, pretty dramatic impact, actually, on the R rate, which is the thing that we're all trying to grapple with and pull down.
So, okay, so let me, so for instance, just because I find that people pay attention more when I put stuff up on the screen. Oh, Periel disabled screen sharing for some reason. Okay.
Yeah, can I ask the Kai? I mean, so this 50-day thing, are you saying that it's too late? Are you contradicting Ryan in that regard, with regard to New York, that it's too late to wear a mask?
Right. No, this is absolutely an important qualification. So in the models that we built, these were assuming scenarios where you didn't do anything, and comparing that with situations where you actually put on masks at different levels. What New York did was New York actually clamped down really hard. And because of that, all of those NPIs, all of those non-pharmaceutical interventions helped to start containing it again. So exactly as Noam was saying, now New York is driving local transmission back down. And so that effectively brings us back to an earlier stage. Now, of course, a much higher percentage of the population probably has already been infected. We'll know for sure the numbers only much later. But because of that, it is once again important, especially as we start lifting lockdown measures, to mask up, because we've pushed the timeline back a little bit before day 50. The day 50 is if you are not doing very much of anything, right? And obviously New York has been doing a lot. So it is absolutely critical to mask up as we start lifting down the measures, and then to do the testing and the tracing really hard, so that if we start experiencing second waves, as many other countries and regions that have been trying to lift lockdowns have experienced, then we have to sort of crack down a little bit harder on that until we drive it down again. So there may be successive wet spikes, and then everybody sort of has to say, okay, let's back off a little bit and then try again a little bit. So wearing is the best way to help to increase our odds as we try and attempt to do that.
So I want to come back to contact tracing in a second, actually. But there's a headline here from Vanity Fair. You can see it, right? 80%, if 80% of Americans wore masks, a new study would say infections would plummet. Now, when I hear that, I'm like, well, there's no such thing as plummeting. Plummeting is a direction, and the direction either continues down to zero or it continues, to herd immunity. So when I see plummet, I see the light at the end of the tunnel as it continues plummet. Is that headline accurate in your estimation, whoever wants to answer that?
I mean, you just look at Hong Kong. Shall we take turn? I mean, Hong Kong, we actually have experienced that plummet. We went 23 days recently in a row with no local transmissions. Wow. That's plummeting.
Incredible.
So I'll show you, and I'll just show you. So something came out. I saw it on Marginal. You guys check out Marginal Revolution, Tyler Cowen's site from time to time. So he had this new paper, Critical Levels of Mask Efficiency and Mask Adoption have Theoretically Extinguished Respiratory Virus. There was this study that I think you guys had this same graph here, this
that's right,
yellow to blue thing. I'd seen that like 2 or 3 weeks ago this came out, if not more. Yep. And essentially it says basically if 80% of the people wear masks and the masks are 80% efficient, or even less than that, it looks like 70 and 70 or something, that would be enough to bring the R naught below zero. So what I'm wondering if I could get you guys to do me a favor. Can you write a paper you know, in the serve something up to the social media beast that you know is there, and write a paper telling us how to get out of this dilemma. You know, saying, you know, your plan for ending the coronavirus, and like my plan would be as follows. If I could do it, I'd say everybody in New York City is going to wear a mask inside out or outside, inside or outside, no matter what. We're not going to have cops with tape measures figuring out how far apart you are. We're not going to have people separating and then the cop comes back and then you, I mean, the cop comes over, you move apart. And then as soon as the cop goes away, you, Jesus Christ, I'm butchering my language here. Let me relax. We're not going to have cops walking over telling you to separate. Then you separate. Then as soon as the cop comes back, you huddle back together again. It needs to be like $1,000 fine, treated as serious as reckless driving or whatever it is. Everybody wears a mask or you stay home. Then we open up and then we see how it goes. And if we see that it's going well, then we can begin to relax each restriction one by one according to what we think would do the least, have the least impact. So maybe people outside in the park no longer have to wear a mask. And one by one, until we find out what works, and that's the plan, because right now nobody's actually offered up a plan to New York of how to do it. We see data, masks work, this work, that works, but I think they need to be spoon-fed a plan that will go around so the leaders say, ah, this guy, Dakai and Ryan have the plan here, and they modeled it and it works. And then pressure builds to adopt that plan. And before you know it, you guys could be winning a Nobel Prize. What's that say?
So this was our plan.
We can't see it because of your virtual background. Okay, now we can see it.
So this was our white paper, yeah. Universal masking to restart society and save lives. It's available from our project resources page, which you can get to from my URL. My URL is just dek.ai, and there's a bright red banner to the COVID-19 project. We do believe that universal masking is a very strong component of that entire picture. We're not saying not to do the contact tracing, not to do the testing or the physical distancing. We should do that. But universal masking has been used successfully in every region that has been able to do the sorts of things that Hong Kong has done.
I read that because that's what made me want to get you guys on. But this is not a criticism. It's quite long and academic, and it's not going to grab the everyday audience. Yeah. And if there was some way in like two paragraphs to just like bullet points to get this out. If CNN covered this one night, you'd see tremendous pressure. Like if you guys could get on CNN or one of these shows, because I think you have the answer here. Now, what do you think of the Dworman plan for reopening New York?
I like it. I think we should do a little bit of a joint cameo on CNN and we'll take the world by storm. One of the key things, this, so I get excited with my background in advertising, now in politics, about that little Venn diagram. So when politics meets advertising, that space in the middle, that's when stuff starts to happen. So exactly what you're talking about, how can we get this down into a very simple one-page document that people see and say, okay, here's the five things that we need to do. And right at the top of that list is mask wearing. The problem we found in the UK is that as soon as you start putting solutions on the table, everyone in government lines up to tell you about why we can't do that thing. So the strategy and the plan, I think, is actually the easy bit. It's the delivery and the implementation of it. And the biggest barrier we had when it came to masks, which is mind-blowing when you think about it, is that if everyone was mandated to wear a mask, then there wouldn't be enough masks for the people who really need them on the front line. It's absolute rubbish. And this is why we try to shift the role and purpose of masks from protecting the wearer to protecting others from transmission. Because even just covering your face with a sock, so stopping fluid and droplets leaving your mouth, has a big impact on your neighbour. And it's starting to change the mindset a little bit of the individual and the citizen too, to really start thinking about other people rather than themselves. And I think there's something quite compelling about that. I think we're in an age when as a message, as a piece of communications, being able to say to people, look, here's how you can do your bit for other people, could be quite compelling. And wearing a mask is one of those things.
One of the things that struck me in that other paper I showed, which was had a lot of like high level calculus and stuff, but one thing I did seem to glean from it is that the effectiveness of the mask is squared if two people wear it, such mm-hmm. that if two people wear rags over their face, it might be more effective than a single person wearing an N95 mask. Did I get that right? That's what it seemed to be saying.
This is actually, in fact, what the simulation that we put online that everybody can try does. Because in this simulation, so there's this 4-minute explainer YouTube video on how to do this, and it actually shows the a bunch of sliders that you can play with. And those there are two sliders that control the mask transmission rate and the mask absorption rate. So the transmission rate is how effective the mask is at stopping particles from getting out when you exhale. Mm-hmm. And the absorption rate is when you're inhaling, how effective it is at stopping that. So those two parameters together, you can dial in your own assumptions. So if you decide, okay, I'm going to make my homemade mask out of fishnet, then you can just go ahead and set your sliders down to zero, both of them. But then you can also say, you know, well, I'm going to build this kind of a cloth mask, and it's not going to have any coffee filters in it or whatever. And so then you can just set it to whatever efficacy you want to. And because you can control those separately, this model, which is the one that's sort of running in my background right now, will actually let you see for yourself the impact when people are wearing masks and how that combines in both the transmission and absorption direction.
And you can get you can see that if someone's listening but not watching, dek.ai, http:/dek.ai. I don't know AI was an extension on the internet. I actually played with that. It's pretty interesting. Contact tracing. So am I wrong here? Because a lot of people keep telling me about how important it is to wash my hands and how much virus is being spread by touching surfaces and stuff. And to me, I don't believe that's really true, or people really believe it's true, because if that were the case, then how far could contact tracing get us? If people were catching viruses by touching stuff an hour after someone else was in the restaurant or something, would contact tracing even work that well?
Contact tracing, I think, could have a profound impact on containing the virus, because if you think about how it works, if I'm in your proximity, and even if there's a small chance that I've passed on the virus to you, I don't know, by coughing over your shoulder or wiping my hand accidentally on your face, which is something I have been known to do, then contact tracing will mean that we can identify. You'll get an alert on your phone, say, and it'll tell you to self-isolate. Or, and this is really crucial, if you've got a proper testing strategy in place, so if states and countries have built up their test capacity, you'll get an alert on your phone saying that you come to contact with someone who has got COVID-19 or has exhibited the symptoms of COVID-19. And therefore, you can go for a test, and then that test come back positive or negative. If you come back positive, then that then triggers a chain of interactions with people you've come into contact with. And what you're doing is, you're outrunning the virus. At the moment, we're just letting the virus outrun us. Obviously, lockdown's a little bit different from that and stops it. But out of lockdown, you're letting the virus run at its own pace. Whereas what we're trying to do here with contact tracing is saying, okay, you might have it. Step back from society. Lock yourselves down. Let everyone else carry on as normal. And then if the virus is isolated, you can start to see how it might then disappear. And that has a positive impact then on the R rate, which pushes it below one.
So, and is there but that implies that most people are getting it by being in close proximity to each other rather than touching something that somebody touched yesterday, right?
Yeah, the papers we've looked at certainly show that most of the transmissions happen in households, actually, and on public transport, so in small contained spaces.
What about wearing masks? Because most of the things that are shut down right now in New York are bars, restaurants. Of course, Noam's a comedy club owner. That's been shut down. Places where people eat and drink. So if we're going to use masks, how are we going to do it in restaurants and bars and places that serve food and drink? Or we cannot. You're saying, or you're saying that that has to wait until the virus is completely gone.
So in Hong Kong, the restaurants have never been shut down. All we've done is the sensible physical distancing. So tables were set apart by 6 feet. Each table would have a maximum of 4 people at it. That has since been relaxed to 8 people at a table. We have had no, you know, obviously you take off your masks as you're eating and drinking. And so because of this combination, we haven't needed to close down the restaurants.
Are people wearing masks in between taking a bite, taking a sip, or are they just going masked altogether?
No, once they sit down at the table and the food is served, they basically take off the mask for the duration of the meal.
Now, so that'd be great. Is there any possibility of something? I remember reading, I'm going to get it wrong, but there's some childhood vaccine that apparently is common in Asia that's not common in the West. And some people speculated maybe that vaccine gave some advantage to people from Asia. You know what I'm referring to?
Yeah, I don't think that's accurate. It fails to account for the fact that actually the infection rates in Asian Americans, as well as some other countries, is also like half of that of the rest of the population.
Yeah,
but this has to do with this acceptance of hygiene. You know, it's masking. It's also, you know, taking shoes off at the door and other things like that. So there's really strong cultural tendencies. I don't think it's, you know, some vaccine somebody has had.
Periel, you're almost at half an hour. Do you want to say something, Periel?
I mean, my understanding from everything that I've read is that one of the biggest issues you have here in this country is just the sheer idiocy and arrogance of people thinking that their freedom is somehow being, you know, oppressed by them having to wear masks, which I've been arguing with people about recently on Facebook, actually, which is generally a practice I never engage in. But it's, I mean, to Ryan's point, I mean, it's just astonishing. And I think America might be the only place in the world, although what Ryan is saying is suggesting that perhaps that's not the case, where you could even imagine that that would be a thought that occurred to somebody.
I want to say a word on behalf of the American public. Nobody's actually explained this to them. Like every person we speak to, and I start showing them these headlines and showing them some studies, they're like, this can't be right because I would have heard about this on the news already. You know, like they think they don't want to wear masks because it's a total waste of time or it's silly or whatever it is. They've been told that they don't work or they're told they're counterproductive. I think that they need to, there's a real failure of our media here to really present statistics and facts. So people, I mean, who wouldn't wear a mask if they believed that would prevent them from getting COVID-19? Like who wouldn't wear a mask?
And you know, I have to say that we've been making progress on that. On that forefront, you know, probably about 80%, according to the latest surveys, of Americans actually are on board now with the masks. But what we hear about on the news is primarily whatever the other 20-some percent are. I think that this is, you know, still residual from thinking about masks as something that we use to protect ourselves. It's not. We use masks to protect the community from ourselves. And I think that the way we have to explain it has to do with, you know, think about this. If we get attacked by whatever terrorists or something, and you know they kill 3,000-4,000 of us, you know, we go to all sorts of things to like put that kind of attack down, right? We are asked to go to a wartime footing. You know, people have to suit up for war and go overseas, and you know, go into the trenches almost. That is a lot of defending our country. And Americans everywhere are on board with that. It has nothing to do with which side of this issue you're on. And we have to understand that when we've got an enemy that is killing 3,000 or 4,000 of us per day in the U.S., that we have to fight that enemy and we have to defend our country and our community. That is our patriotic duty.
I agree with you very much. All right. Well, I mean, I have a few contacts with some journalists who are on television, and I'm going to make sure that they see this, because on top of being really, really smart, you're both quite telegenic. And no, really, like, you have an awesome look. And I really think that if people heard this stuff, it could really catch on. And, you know, we all want this to end.
So I sent you an article in the New York Post. It was more of a rant than an article, basically saying, open the fuck up now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how they feel about that. I'm not that sympathetic to that. I want to open the fuck up responsibly with everybody wearing masks. Then I'd be like, yeah.
The lockdown was important because it suppressed the virus and it bought us time. The question you've got to ask is, how well have governments used that time that it's bought? So have they introduced test and trace facilities and infrastructure? Not in the UK, it's been poor. I think similar in the US. Have they made the case about masks to the population? And critically, have they started to onshore manufacture of masks, which is a very, very easy thing to do? The answer is no. So
real.
It's a real challenge. We've got to make the case for it. And I agree. I think communication is absolutely critical to all of this. And if people understood it was their civic duty, and you know, you rarely spoke to the head and the heart, I think it could be quite a powerful message to get across, and people would listen to it. And we've got a phenomenal case study in what's happened across Asia and just how quickly those guys put on a mask when they knew there was a crisis and challenge. And the case speaks brilliantly to that. So I think, you know, we're all aligned on this, right?
When I go outside here in New York, I will say that I, at least in New York City, and I don't know if this represents everybody, but most people are on board with the masks. I would say about 90% of the population that I see outside are wearing masks, and every store requires you to have a mask to get in the store. Mm. So I think the New Yorkers are, you know, on board with that.
I see a lot, or I see them wearing half a mask or taking.
Hanging over their chin while they're like screaming onto their cell phone and like spitting all over the place.
By the way,
even a little bit of mask wearing is good.
Go ahead. I'm afraid that one cultural problem difference between America and Asian countries is that people will turn off their contact tracing apps here. If they have it, they're just gonna be like, I don't want anybody to know I had it, and they're just gonna shut that cell phone off. So I worry about that actually not panning out. But I guess it can't hurt. You never know the law of unintended consequences.
The solution is always gonna be a combination of different measures. And what we can't do is just look at one solution as the silver bullet. It's having a combination of things, which none of them will work 100%. There'll be people who wear masks that are a little bit skew-whiff, or you know, they use a sock that's got a hole in it, so on and so forth. And the fact is, if you have three or four measures at play simultaneously, that will do enough to start bringing the R rate down, and we can live a relatively normal life. Make sure the economy is not falling apart, and move from lockdowns where we're suppressing COVID-19 to a new normal where we're just mitigating the virus as and when we can.
All right. And the final thought is, you said, I'll give you the last word after this, that Dakai made a comment about fishnets, and I just want to tell Periel, I don't think you should be using your panties as a mask, all right? But go ahead, Dakai.
Them, though, I think.
finish up.
Absolutely, there is a positive connection between the different interventions. And so, like, to do contact tracing effectively, you also have to have testing effectively so that you know which contacts to trace. And when you have masking, that helps reinforce with the social distancing, because the physical distance, you know, when you're wearing masks, if you're 6 feet apart from other people wearing masks, that combines to give you much greater effectiveness.
Oh, that's a good question. How close can we get to each other if we're wearing masks?
I think it's still a good idea to maintain that kind of distance if you can. Now, if it's a very small group that you're always hanging around, then obviously you can be closer. But you want to try to reduce the mixing proportions, right? So you don't want too many people who don't run into each other all crammed together, because then you're just going to increase the chances of spread. And, you know, like, there is a lot of evidence that even for countries that had universal masking and succeeded that did not do much contact tracing. So
Japan didn't do any.
Japan, I'm talking the Czech Republic, Slovenia, Slovakia. They didn't have much tracing infrastructure in, but they had the universal masking and they successfully fought down the spread of the virus.
Japan is amazing.
Was the final goal elimination of the virus or herd via it can't find a host or via herd immunity? But just via herd immunity, you might want to encourage people to get it, no?
I don't think we have a lot of evidence for successive herd immunity yet. That doesn't seem like to me, that really doesn't seem like your default assumption that that's what you should do. I think countries that are doing that, basically, mostly it's because they were underprepared at the beginning and sort of found themselves in a position politically where they had not much choice left, whether they acknowledged that that's what they were doing or not.
I mean, if a vaccine could potentially be coming down in January, let's say, then wearing masks until January, as you said, it should be something that pulls us all together. I mean, it's not asking a lot. We're locked in our homes, losing tens of thousands of dollars, and now you're complaining about wearing a mask? Like, let's just pull together. We should, instead of Rosie the Riveter, we need to have Rosie the, Myrna the Mask Maker or something.
Mask maker, make me a mask.
All the fact, I never had much faith in the federal government commandeering factories to make ventilators, but certainly they could make masks.
There are mask companies banging on the door saying, give us space, find us a factory. We'll move some of our operations from China, or we'll build machines in China that we can import over here. It creates jobs for local people, and you're able to onshore supply and make sure that you've got your own distribution. That's it. That gives you security in your supply chains, and it means that you don't end up in a situation which is where the UK and the US found themselves, as COVID took off, which is where you're shouting at China, and then you're asking them behind closed doors if they can send over millions of masks at the same time.
Yeah. All right, gentlemen, it's been an absolute pleasure, and I hope we're doing a public service here, and I really want to try to help you guys get your word out. I'm more convinced than ever after just speaking to you and seeing you and you know, kind of taking the temperature of your credibility that I no, it's true. Like, we had Alex Berenson on, Alex Berenson, and afterwards I was like, I'm just not buying this guy. But you guys, I feel even more confident about. So anyway, be safe. I know none of us are wearing masks, so I guess.
Oh God, you caught us out. They get the credibility.
I'm
else.
Sitting in a crowded bar here. Actually, you can't tell.
and if they do open the world up again, I'd love to meet you guys in person. If you ever want to come down to the Comedy Cellar and hang out and have a drink. Anything else? That's it.
Thank you so much.
If somebody can invent a mask that doesn't kill my ears, I'd be most grateful. Wait, it goes Perry, in the back.
Perry, send me the link to this as soon as you possibly can tonight so I can send this. I have somebody in mind I want to send it to them. Maybe
I will. I have one more question, which is if you guys have to go, you don't feel obligated to stay. Noam or Dan could maybe help answer this. So wearing a mask, I know, helps you to not get other people sick, but doesn't it prevent you at all from getting sick?
Is that
contingent upon if you're wearing a KN95 or a cloth mask?
Exactly that. So the disposable surgical masks or the custom-made masks, see them as protecting other people. And then the N95 mask with the filtration in, the ones that our doctors and nurses wear, they're the ones that protect the wearer.
What about the KN95 ones?
Yeah. Those protect the wearer, yeah.
And by the way, I just bought 100 of them. They're available on the internet.
You guys wait 1 second just for the viewer. 1 second. Hang on.
Yeah, don't wear the masks that have the exhalation valve. That those are made for medical workers who have to be confronting patients for 24 hours a day. And so they're designed to let them exhale with no effort. And there are little flaps that open up on the exhale. That will do nothing to help protect the people around you. So we need to really, to Ryan's point, separate medical PPE from the kind of non-medical masks that we're talking about here for the general public.
That's a huge point. I'm happy you said that. I'm happy we stayed on to do that. Go ahead, Perry Alden.
Okay, just for viewing, if we're going to really do a public service announcement, let's do them properly. This is just a cloth, regular cloth. You see, I have my little I Love New York sign there.
Yeah. Nice.
This is going to prevent you from getting other people sick, right?
Yes.
Yep. Yeah.
This is a disposable surgical mask, which I actually got the last time I was in the Comedy Cellar before you guys closed.
Same. I'll protect others.
This is a KN95 mask.
Ooh. Nice.
Okay.
Look at the
hot.
Okay.
Ariel, they gotta go.
Okay, they can go.
Oh well, no, I want to go too, actually.
Well, you can go in a second. And the last one is the N95, which are for the doctors and the healthcare workers.
Oh, they're the same. K and the N are basically the same, from what I understand. No,
the N95s are better, right, guys?
It depends on the may. They're fairly comparable.
Okay. All right.
Yeah,
so that's what I've got.
Okay, gentlemen, really, I can't say it enough. This was fantastic. I really appreciate it. And please, hopefully we can talk again when something new happens on this issue. Okay.
Where can everybody find you guys? Dakai, we have your site up. And Ryan?
I'm at Twitter at Dakai, D-E-K-A-I 123. That's my Twitter.
Nice.
I'm on Twitter as well, so it's Ryan and then _ Wayne, which is W-A-I-N. And you can find me on the Tony Blair Institute website as well.
Thank you guys so much. You were so nice to come on, and it's been nice chatting with you over email too. And I'll let you know when this is up.
Spread the word.
Pleasure.
All right, guys.
Thank you. And you can find us at Live From The Table on Instagram, and you can email us at
podcast@comedyseller.com.
Thank you. Bye, everybody.